Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Really excited to bring in Frank Isola now. He is the jack of all trades, been doing everything, writing, moved into television, does radio, really impressed his overall talent. He's going to be on with us now as a weekly guest. Obviously, a lot of you know him from around the horn. If you're from the New York City area, you've probably been reading him for years and years. So let's bring him in right now. So, Frank, did you stay up last night for Warriors Rockets?
I stayed up. Did you stay up? That's the question.
Yeah, so I said I watched the first quarter. And then I was in bed, and I was thinking, hey, I'm going to stay up, and then I fell asleep. But I magically woke up twice. I woke up once with, like, 5 minutes left in the second quarter, and I was like, okay, the Warriors are still up double figures. I'll just keep sleeping. And then I woke up at, like, midnight my time, rolled over, checked my phone to see what the score was, saw there was 5 minutes left, and it looked like it was going to be somewhat competitive, turned it on, and watched the final 5 minutes. So I missed the Kevin Durant injury. So I want to start there. So more props to you for staying up for the entire thing. But on the Durant injury, do you believe the Warriors when they say it's a calf strain, or do you think it's something more significant?
Yeah, I'm still waiting on that one. I've always thought, you know, years from covering sports, and especially a sport like baseball, I was always told, always never underplay an injury because teams will tend to lie in situations. So I'm going to hold off on that one. I'm not so sure yet that could just be a calf. I will say this. I've seen players over the years, whether it was Kobe Bryant or whether it was Ryan Howard. Remember the player for the Phillies? He blew out his Achilles. He fell. David Beckham, when he blew out his Achilles, he fell. The fact that Kevin Durant didn't fall, in that moment I thought, I wonder if it's just a calf injury. That's what they reported. But we'll wait and see what happens today.
Do you think, all right, let's assume that Kevin Durant doesn't have a serious Achilles injury and that he's not going to be out for a long time next year. Do you think, as a New York City guy who's been covering the Knicks and has known the Knicks and their best and worst for a very long time, do you think Kevin Durant's going to join the Knicks, or do you think this is some big smokescreen and right before the last moment the chair's going to get pulled out and the Knicks are going to fall to the ground like it seems like it's happened so many times?
And that's what a lot of Knicks fans are wondering. I will say this. When you go around the NBA, Clay, you talk to people, whether it's other players, executives, a lot of agents feel this way, everyone mentions the Knicks with Kevin Durant. And a lot, obviously, if he's going to the Knicks, he's not going for basketball reasons. I mean, look at the situation he's in now. And look at where the Knicks are. So is it about brand building, building your business empire? If it is, then I think there's a very good chance to go to the Knicks. But come on, you're going to be leaving the Warriors. Well, you've already been to the finals twice. You still could go a third time. And you're going to go to a team that won 17 games last season? That would be a pretty interesting move. And everyone says, oh, his legacy. He wants to help his legacy. He could actually hurt his legacy. A lot of guys going to New York, whether it was Amari Stoudemire, Phil Jackson, Larry Brown, Isaiah Thomas, they actually hurt their legacy by going to New York. So that he has to weigh that factor in as well.
No, I think that's good. That's well said. Now, what do you think about Kyrie? I mean, it seems very clear that the Celtics, for whatever reason, and Kyrie Irving never really all gelled, and that he's not particularly well-liked on that team and in that locker room, and they had a lot worse performance in the postseason with him, even though they were more talented this year than they were last year. Do you think he's also going to join the Knicks, or where would you assess his most likely destination? And of all the guys out there, do the Knicks want Kyrie? Do you think a Kyrie and Kevin Durant combo, maybe with Zion Williamson, would be as good as you could go, or is there somewhere other direction you'd be interested in if you were the Knicks?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that Kyrie Irving is a terrific player, but let's remember one thing. Last year, he didn't play in the playoffs, and the Cleveland Cavaliers made the finals without him, and the Boston Celtics made it to a Game 7 of a conference finals without him.
Yes.
This year, they won 5 games with him. So Kyrie Irving has to look at himself, because we know that Kyrie Irving, when he's up at the podium, he loves to tell you how smart of a basketball player he is, how great of a player he is, how smart of a person he is. I get all that. But at some point, he's got to sit back and wonder, you know, how much of this falls on him. I do think that the Knicks would have interest. My big thing with Kyrie Irving, and I don't know if you agree with me, look at his history of injuries. That's going to be the big issue. He's had a lot of injuries over his career, including that knee. He had a procedure on it a couple of times last season. And let's not forget, when you keep talking about, you know, whether or not this guy doesn't like him on the team. His teammates, to me, I definitely had an issue with him. The one guy that he has in his corner is Danny Ainge. Notice how you never hear anything from Danny Ainge when all this stuff was going on this season, good or bad, with the Celtics. From everything that I've heard, Danny Ainge likes Kyrie Irving, wants him on the team because he believes that Kyrie Irving is a closer, is a big-time player that can help them win games. It certainly didn't happen this year, and who knows, maybe after what happened in this playoffs, that was change his thinking. But from everything that I've heard, Danny Ainge wants Kyrie Irving on that team.
All right, drama elsewhere in the NBA, and drama seems to be everywhere, and this is particularly the case, I think, with the Lakers. It doesn't matter what happens, drama is following. Newest report, Ty Lue wanted 5 years. Lakers would only guarantee him 3 years, basically pegs the idea that he is LeBron's handpicked coach. Suddenly seems like the Lakers might be standing up to LeBron, even contemplating trading him. What happens with LeBron in L.A.?
Oh, it's a complete circus. There's no question about it. And I've always been of the belief, and we know what LeBron is all about. He's behind the scenes. He's going to want control. And then publicly, he's going to want to make it seem like, especially when things go wrong. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly right.
I'm not management. But I feel this way. He's 34 years old. You signed up for this when you go out and get LeBron. How can you not know this if you're the Lakers? Now, I understand it was different with Magic Johnson there. But if I'm the Lakers, one of two things. I'm either making LeBron James my partner and including him on big things like who the coach is going to be, because if he's not going to be happy, the whole thing's not going to work, or you trade him. To me, you got to go one way or the other. You can't, you know, go halfway with him. And I think right now that's the big thing with Jeannie Buss, Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis. They don't want to cede control to LeBron James. And if LeBron James is going to be unhappy, what's going to happen is what happened this season, where there's going to be a lot of dysfunction. There's going to be a lot of the chemistry in the locker room is not going to be good. The season for the Lakers turned on two things. We all know that when LeBron got hurt, that was a major thing. But then he wanted half the team traded for Anthony Davis. But then he tries to come out and make it seem like that wasn't him who had done it, when we all know that was the case. So the Lakers are an absolute mess, and that's a big thing they have to decide. Because I think, first of all, they're in a great position because they can trade LeBron. And to me, there are teams out there that would want him. I think the Knicks would take him in a heartbeat. So that's something they seriously have to explore. Do we do everything that LeBron wants, or should we try to trade him?
This is fascinating to me. LeBron's going to turn 35, I believe, in December. So we're talking about him being, in theory, on the tail end of his career. Now, maybe it lasts for a little bit longer. He obviously had the issue with his groin. We'll see how healthy he can be. But when you look at the fact that he signed a four-year deal with the Lakers without a no-trade clause, in other words, the Lakers can trade him. Is this an unbelievable oversight? I'm stunned that he would commit to any team and give them control. I think the ultimate irony here, Frank, and we're talking now with new weekly guest Frank Isola. You can find him on Twitter at, what do you got? At the Frank Isola.
At the Frank Isola.
Yes, I got it in front of me right here. So make sure you go follow him. Thank him for coming on this morning. So what's fascinating to me about this is, can you imagine the irony? If the Lakers shipped LeBron James to the Pelicans in exchange for Anthony Davis, and LeBron, who tried to trade the rest of the roster for Anthony Davis, ended up getting sent to New Orleans, an awful situation. I don't even know what would happen, because I can only imagine LeBron James, who thought he was playing chess when he tried to get that move made, and it ends up he's playing Uno, and he's got somebody else has four draw four cards in a row, and he's got no recourse at all. So, I mean, what would happen if they just decide? A lot of people out there are going to say, oh, you mentioned the Knicks. They could try to set up a sign and trade with a lot of teams that maybe have opportunities for him to contend for championships. But what if they just sent him to a really crappy team that honestly is at best a 500 team, like I think it would be fair to say that the Pelicans would be, and in exchange they got Anthony Davis, and the Lakers got Anthony Davis, and LeBron didn't get to play with him. I mean, I don't know that we've really contemplated if he got sent to a team that's not very good.
Well, first of all, his birthday is December 30th. Shame on you for not remembering
that. Yes, there you go.
Probably send him a gift. But that is, obviously, all that stuff should be on the table. Hey, LeBron always does what's best for LeBron. Why can't the Lakers do what's best for the Lakers? And when you look at their roster, the composition of their roster, there's a lot of young players there.
It never made any sense for them to pair an aging superstar with a bunch of young talent like they did and expected to gel. Honestly, trading him is their best option.
And Clay, we all know what happened, too. This was we know that LeBron respects Magic Johnson as a player, the things that Magic Johnson did after he after his playing career. What do you think's going through LeBron's head when the people running it are right now Jeannie Buss, Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis, Rob Pelinka? Like, what have they accomplished in their current roles? You cannot tell me that LeBron James, 34 going on 35, is sitting back thinking, they got this. They'll be able to figure it out. I have complete faith. And remember, before all this crew all got there, now Jeannie Buss was part of it, what free agents went to L.A.? I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge showed up there. They got two meetings with LaMarcus Aldridge, and he still wouldn't go. Paul George wouldn't give him a meeting last year. Everyone thought it was a fait accompli that Paul George was going to go sign with the Lakers. So the whole Laker brand, in a lot of ways, has been damaged. And this whole situation, because you have LeBron at 34 and the rest of the players are all these young guys, it doesn't seem to make any sense. I think the whole thing about trading LeBron, I think it's going to gain momentum.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. And one of my guys who comes on with us weekly, Petros Papadakis, has been doing L.A. radio, born and raised in L.A. He made a good point when LeBron first went there. He said, look, the Heat history, by and large, doesn't really exist without LeBron James. So he felt like he went to Miami and he made them. Now, I know they won one title with Dwayne Wade before he got there. But in general, that's correct. The Cleveland Cavaliers were willing to bend over backwards. LeBron was bigger than the franchise. He said, I'm really fascinated to see how this plays out. LeBron's not bigger than the Lakers. And the Laker franchise is, it's the Yankees, it's the Celtics. Like, there is no one player who is going to show up and take over the Laker franchise. And LeBron treated the Lakers like they were the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think there is some element of the Buss family that resents that and is saying, hey, the Lakers are going to be here long after you, LeBron James. Our history is incredibly storied. This four-year period of your career is really just a blip on the overall Laker radar, and I think you've had tension with that relationship from the get-go for that reason.
I think you're 100% right. Also, Clay, go back to the reactions of the fans when LeBron first went there. You know, here's the best free agent in basketball. He signs with the Lakers, and a lot of fans didn't like it at the time. Now, some of it was crazy because the fans had this loyalty to Kobe Bryant. The fans made it sound like they decided not to bring Kobe Bryant back, instead used the money on LeBron James. That wasn't the case, but it was kind of odd, the situation that LeBron walked into. But you can't tell me that he's helped the situation. A, they didn't make the playoffs, number one. Number two, all this dysfunction and the whole thing going back to the Anthony Davis trade. And I think being on this show that he's got the shop, I don't think that helps him either. Because every time you have to hear from LeBron, it's when he does this show. And I thought his comments, though, about Magic Johnson were pretty interesting. You could tell that he feels somewhat betrayed and bent out of shape, which, of course, is pretty incredible that he's upset that Magic didn't call him before he left. Yet when LeBron leaves, he doesn't give anybody a heads up that he's leaving. Yet he wants Magic to afford him that courtesy.
It is amazing. All right, I want to go to this question. I'm not sure if you paid much attention to it yesterday. The Chicago Cubs have evidently banned a fan for life for putting a circle, like the gesture. It's easier to do this if we were doing television or if we had the ability to share a still image during the course of radio. But yeah, there's a huge percentage of our listenership out there that has played at some point, either wittingly or unwittingly, the circle game. And the circle game is basically you make a circle and you hold it below your waist. And if somebody looks at you with the circle below your waist, you punch them a couple of times in the shoulder, right? This is an old high school kids, pre-high school, middle school game that has been being played as long as I can remember. So the Cubs have a fan. I don't know that the fan's been identified publicly. He's on camera throwing up the peace sign, and then behind a black interview subject or a host, I guess, right? I'm not an expert. I think it's a local Chicago broadcast. He puts the circle, which I think is clearly the circle game. He's trying to, like, show his friends, ha-ha, I'm going to punch you, whatever. And evidently, there are some people who use this as a white power sign. Now, I don't even know when this started, because it's also the exact same sign that players throw up when they hit the three-point baskets. So this whole thing is absurd. But the Cubs are now saying they are banning this fan for life. This story was playing out while I was on the golf course yesterday, so admittedly, I'm not an expert on it. But this is utterly insane, right? Is this just another evidence of social media losing its mind?
Oh, I think that's definitely the case. And, of course, you know, you can't go 5 minutes without anybody being offended about something and jumping to conclusions like that. But that's a little too much. You know what? It's funny, though, when you're a team like the Chicago Cubs, you can do it because there actually is a demand to get tickets to your place.
Yeah.
I think that, but I also think that's taking it probably a little too far and jumping to conclusions on what the actions or what the person meant by doing something like that, especially the way you explained it.
My thing is, if the fan decided on live television to throw up the peace sign, which is very common, right? Like the number of dudes who still pose in photos throwing up the peace sign, even though they're like 50 years old, is insane, right? So that's number one. Number two, if you are dumb enough to throw up a white power sign on a Chicago Cubs broadcast, you are one of the all-time idiots on the planet, and you should be banned for stupidity alone. Because you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose, like, every element of your life is over if you're throwing up white power signs during a Chicago Cubs broadcast. But the thing is, why would you throw up the peace sign first? Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem to me like very many skinheads are like, you know what, I really wish there was less violence in the world. I'm a big, you know, like, peace guy. And then you follow it up with the white power sign. I think it's clear the guy is, like, probably 16 years old. And he's doing the, like, I'm going to, you know, like the, if you see this circle, you get punched in the arm. And he has no clue. And I just think this whole thing is insane because we assume the worst every time something happens now on social media before we even know anything at all.
Clay, how many times have you seen someone doing a live news report somewhere out on the street where a terrible crime has been committed and people in the background are acting like knuckleheads?
Oh, yeah.
Jumping around trying to get on television. A lot of times that has something to do with it. And hey, come on, even on ESPN, they kind of invite it when they have college game day and they're, you know, they go to these campuses and the students are all into it. Everybody comes out with the funny signs and things like that. And everyone's trying to get on TV. I think that has more to do with it than trying to make a political statement or a social statement. I would think that would be the case. He basically wants his buddies who are watching TV to look at him.
And know it's him. Like, hey, I'm about to be on television. I would like for this guy to come out. I don't think he will now because now he's a white supremacist. But again, I would just ask people out there, how many times have you seen someone who is a white supremacist also be the kind of guy who throws up the peace gesture because he's a big global peace guy? It doesn't happen very often. Usually people who are, you know, members of hate groups are not exactly known for their request that there be more peace in the world. It's not like Osama it's not like Osama bin Laden at the end of his videos when he's like calling for jihad back in the day would begin or end them by throwing up the peace gesture. I want the world to come to an end. We're going to rain down holy hell and terror upon you. You will never know when we're going to strike. And then at the end, he throws up the peace gesture. That would be a bit incongruous, I think, for most people out there. Wait a minute. You just told us you're going to kill us, and then at the end, you're throwing up the peace gesture? I'm not knowing that I'm necessarily buying that those two things are connected, but people can't use their brains anymore. Tell people out there, by the way, and I'm excited you're going to be with us on a weekly hits now, where they can find you doing everything, because I know you're everywhere right now. And also, you can kind of lay out this new partnership, because I'm excited. I've respected and liked you for a long time, and I'm excited we're going to be able to talk more frequently.
You could at The Athletic, obviously. Then I do a show on Sirius, an NBA show with Brian Scalabrine, Mr. Boston Celtic himself. So I don't think he'll be waving his Celtic pom-poms today. And then, of course, on ESPN, Around the Horn, and occasionally PTI.
Awesome. Outstanding stuff, my man. I know you got a billion different jobs. You're like me. I appreciate the hustle, and we'll be talking to you weekly here on out. I can't wait.
Thanks a lot, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I think, if you're just waking up, Kevin Durant went out with what they're calling a right calf injury last night. Now, Steve Kerr was pretty pumped at the way his team responded in the wake of losing Kevin Durant, and the Warriors did really at that time rely on the old school Splash Brothers. Klay Thompson and Steph Curry both played really well down the stretch, made a lot of big plays and big shots. Here is how Steve Kerr described their performance.
Liverpool yesterday came out with just one of the great wins in soccer history, and after the match, their manager, Jurgen Klopp, said, I'm, you know, the young kids in Liverpool are probably asleep by now, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it, but our boys are giants. That's what he said. I know how he feels, so I apologize to my mom, who is probably watching, but our guys are giants. Like, that was an unbelievable victory tonight. What's that? Yes, yes. After dark, I'm a different guy right now. Sorry, Mom.
So that's pretty outstanding. Steve Kerr dropping double F-bombs to describe the way that his guys played down the stretch. But I think the scary thing for the Warriors going forward now is this. Can they win this series without Kevin Durant? We have an eerie mirroring of what happened in last year's seven-game series between the Warriors and the Rockets when Chris Paul went down. And I think most people listening right now would say they would have felt pretty good about the Rockets' chances to win one of the final two games in this series if you hadn't had the injury go down and happen to Chris Paul. So I fully expect the Rockets are out to a 5.5-point favorites in Game 6, which will be Friday night at 8. Already Steve Kerr has said it's highly unlikely that Kevin Durant is going to play. The question, I think, turns to Game 7, and it is this. Can the Warriors get a closeout in this series without Kevin Durant? Because it's a quick turnaround on Sunday. Sunday, you have a 3 o'clock Eastern tip on Sunday afternoon. So you're talking about guys, it's crazy now to me that they took like a four-day gap, didn't they, after game two in this series. But now you're going to play three games in really pretty rapid fashion, flying back and forth between California and Texas. So you're going to play a late-night Friday game. You're going to finish that game, let's say, at 11 o'clock local time in Houston or thereabouts. The Rockets gonna get to probably, I don't think they'll fly all the way on Saturday. I would think they would go home, go to sleep in their own beds, and then fly back. But you're talking about a pretty quick turnaround. So you get back to, let's say both teams get in at some point Saturday to the Bay Area, and then you get a little bit of rest, and then you come back, and you've got a relatively early noon tip in the Bay Area on Sunday to get ready for what would be a Game 7. So I don't think there's any chance that Kevin Durant is going to play on Game 6. And I'm not sure there's a very good chance he's going to play on Game 7. So I want to bring in the crew right now. We'll get a quick poll here. Do you think that the Warriors can win this series, one of two games now, theoretically, without Kevin Durant against the Rockets, particularly when you consider that in the last 19 games these two teams have played, I think it's 19 now, the Rockets have won 10 and the Warriors have won 9. And two of those Warrior wins were without Chris Paul. I don't necessarily think they can. Danny G, quickly, you think they can win two in a row without Kevin Durant?
Man.
Or win one out of two, I'm sorry.
What's crazy is on Monday I told you on the air that the Rockets weren't winning this series unless Kevin Durant broke his leg. Now, this isn't a break, but it's a significant injury. This is the moment, I think, where Steph Curry needs to really step up and be a legend. And if he does and their defense stays active the way it was last night, yeah, they can win two in a row.
What do you think is going to happen, Dub? Do the Rockets win two in a row or do the Warriors win one out of two?
I like the Warriors here. I mean, we've seen the Rockets in the situation before. A few years back with the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard was out, and they still were unable to get it done. They lost by about 30 points. I'm going to roll with the Warriors.
What about you, Dub? What about you, Eddie Garcia? Which way are you going?
Rockets win game six. Warriors come back and squeak one out in game seven.
I agree with you on that one. Roberto, your call.
The Warriors still win.
So you like the Warriors to win game seven or to win game six?
They'll win game seven.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
All right, we're going to open up phone lines for the Outkick jury. We are going to put the fan on trial who flashed the okay gesture during a game. I posted the picture if you want to see it. It's a still shot. 877-996-6369. We are impaneling the Outkick jury. But as we go to break, I want to hit you with this fact. The Chicago Cubs banned a fan for life that I believe was likely flashing the made you look, now I'm going to punch you twice in the arm gesture, which is insanely popular across the nation for junior high, high school age boys. Probably some of you certainly in college did it. Everybody seems to be very familiar with this game. If you went to school in America and you are a boy, you probably know or have seen someone playing this game. All right? On the same day that they banned this fan for life for a gesture during their broadcast, the Chicago Cubs called up Addison Russell, who beat up his girlfriend, fiance, wife, whatever her current status is, and was suspended 40 games for doing it. So on the same day that they ban a fan for threatening to punch you in the arm while playing a silly game, they promote and pay tons of money to a guy who actually punched a woman. And the social media losers out there are upset more by the hand gesture. Why am I the only person in sports media with a functional brain? I honestly sit back, like, how is this possible? How is it possible that this happens and no one calls out the Cubs for being insane, stupid, idiot hypocrites here? Theo Epstein said he shivered when he saw the gesture. Did you shiver when the dude that you just promoted beat his girlfriend? No, you gave him millions of dollars, you phony, hypocrite, loser, Theo Epstein. How come people don't point out this rank hypocrisy and stupidity? So often in America today, we address the insignificant and don't actually address the significant. I am on one. Get your popcorn. Chicago Cubs, I am going to tee off on them in an incredible fashion when we start off hour three. And also this incredible, hypocritical loser, Theo Epstein. I was shivering when I saw the gesture. Did you shiver when your boy punched his girlfriend, Theo? Of course not, because you're a loser hypocrite.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
When you were a kid in high school, or maybe junior high, did you ever play the game where somebody shows a circle, and if you see the circle, if you look below your friend's waist and see the circle, you get punched in the arm?
I seem to vaguely recall that. I'm not sure that I ever played the game, so to speak, but I do recall that.
You went to Harvard. You might have been too smart to play the game. The game is not known for its complexity, although there was a complicated part, which was if you put your finger through the hole, then you got to punch the other guy in the arm. This is a stupid game, all right? This is a game that we just went around the horn on the show, and because we're all dumb, everybody who's on this show has played that game. We're going to open it up to phone lines for the Outkick jury. I can already tell you that my phone immediately blew up. And a lot of teachers said this game still goes on. It's still popular in junior high. So I bring that up for this reason. Chicago Cubs fan behind Doug Glanville during a local broadcast throws up the peace sign and then does what I think is the gesture for if you look, then I'm going to punch you in the arm in the background. The Cubs have banned this fan for life. Is this insane? I mean, look, I understand if the guy is like, okay, like let's say he's a member of, a terrorist organization, or he's advocating for, you know, white supremacy or whatever else. I don't really know that I think the Chicago Cubs are the organization that I want investigating this guy. Of all the organizations that exist in America, it's not like I'm like, you know, the one group I really trust to look into hate groups is the Chicago Cubs. They've got a great investigative team. But is this not insane? Like that we and maybe this, I always feel like sometimes I talk to people who aren't on social media and they're like, this is what you guys spend time talking about on social media, because only 20% of the population is on Twitter. Only 2% of the population is actually active on Twitter. And so I think oftentimes it leads us down wild goose chases over things that we think people care about and they really don't, because 98% of the rest of the country is like, you're all insane.
Well, here's how I look at it. First and foremost, the Cubs, they did investigate the situation, okay? So the fact that there was a gesture. And it was their conclusion based on that investigation. And again, we're not all privy to what the details were of the investigation. But they reached the conclusion that in this context, this, of course, not being junior high school any longer, that this was something that happened on television that was viewed by a lot of people, in the context of in 2019, it means something differently than it did 20 years ago. that they believed it was racial in nature, and they suspended the fan, banned the fan for life. That was their due diligence on this. We've seen teams ban fans for similar offenses of a racial nature. That happened 2 years ago at Fenway Park.
And, I get that, but isn't the team...
As simply as I could say it is that the Cubs looked into it. They believe that the gesture was done for racial reasons, and they concluded that this is something that was a racially motivated gesture and insult, and they banned the fan for life. That to me, regardless of what other contexts that gesture would have existed in 20 years prior, this is the one they concluded it existed in this week.
You're a smart guy. Doesn't it seem incongruous that you would throw up the peace sign and immediately follow it by a white supremacy sign?
I can't even begin, Clay, to try to speculate as to what the individual was trying
but
to do or what
this
the intent
is,
was.
Yeah, this is. But that's what
at the
Cubs,
end of the day.
But that's what the Cubs are doing, and this is my point in general is that we are allowing people who are stupid, and I think there are a lot of stupid people on social media who are trying to sow division and discord, many of whom aren't even in this country and many of whom aren't even real. We are allowing them to dictate our national discourse. And even if the Cubs do an investigation and determine, you know what, he's doing the shoulder punch game, which I would wager 99.9% chance is likely what's going here when you look at it in the context. As a reasonably intelligent person, when you view this in the context, I think it's highly unlikely that a guy is going to go to a Chicago Cubs game, risk his entire future life by deciding to do a racist hand gesture when his face may be visible and he's going to lose his job and he's going to lose his ability to basically do anything in 2019, and that he's going to precede that by throwing up the peace sign. Like, the context of this story is such that I think because of the way social media covers this, there's a desperate belief to believe the worst about many people in general, right, in this country right now. And so instead of the Cubs coming out and saying, you know what, this is totally innocuous, there was nothing severe here, and risking the Cubs getting criticized for it because the same malcontents who were upset about everything and fall on their fainting couch and complain about everything would say, oh, the Cubs covered for this guy. The easiest thing for them to do is just say, this guy's banned for life. Which, by the way, I don't even know what banned for life means. Are they going to give pictures to every usher at the turnstiles to guarantee that this guy doesn't get back in? I guess you can restrict him from buying season tickets or take them away if he already has them. But otherwise, banned for life doesn't actually mean banned for life. You can always go buy a ticket and show up, right? So this is just a empty gesture in my mind, and I'm sick of stupid empty gestures in the world of sports like this.
Well, I think, Clay, first of all, I would say that it's, to me, at this point, it's hard to extrapolate too much of where this decision fits into the any sort of larger social discussions, because this was one decision made by one Major League Baseball team based on the facts that were collected about one particular incident. And as for the judgment and the checklist that you thought through about what would anyone risk all of these things in a moment for one offensive gesture during the course of a baseball game. Unfortunately, Clay, sometimes people make very, very poor decisions. And this to me, considering the context and, again, realizing that when you're going to throw up a gesture of any kind on television or within view of a television camera, unfortunately for people for some people that have terrible thought patterns, as this person apparently did, your views are communicated now across social media, and you have to be responsible for them. So that's, I think, for this individual, and I'll repeat that the Cubs did an investigation. Clearly, they reached the conclusion this was done for racial purposes, and had a racial motivation, and they took the appropriate steps here. That to me is what I see. I think we everybody in I think in society right now in 2019, understanding the power and influence of social media, when you're going to put a gesture behind someone's face on television, you'd better understand fully what that means. That to me is, and what it means in a current context, that there was an incident of terrorism recently in which that was a gesture associated with it. It's frankly, Clay, to me, the best policy is to not gesticulate towards people, whether the cameras are on or not. And if you do, then you have to understand the consequences. And I think in this particular instance, that the individual doing that did not think through the consequences.
Because he's not racist, and he's trying to show his friends that he's going to punch them because they saw his circle.
I disagree with you on that one. And again, I'll say that it's difficult for either of us. We have not spoken to him. You're an attorney. You understand how that works. We have not walked through the logical process of sitting down with him.
But John, just take a step back. How many white supremacists flashed the peace sign before? Like I was saying earlier, making fun of this.
I have no idea.
If Osama bin Laden had thrown up the peace sign at the end of one of his videos, you'd have been like, man, that doesn't really fit. Like, he's an infidel seeking out to destroy everyone who doesn't believe his brand of religion. And at the end, if he had tapped his chest and thrown up the peace sign, you'd have been like, man, that seems a little bit incongruous. That doesn't fit. Like, context matters in this country, and it should matter for reasonably intelligent people. And when I see Theo Epstein say, I'd like grab his pearls and fall down on the fainting couch, he's just enabling more of this stupidity to continue. But obviously we have a different agreement here.
Yeah.
Let's go into actual on-the-field results.
Sure.
The Chicago Cubs have actually started to play pretty well on the field. I believe they have grabbed first place in the NL Central. What do you think that says about the Cubs in general? Have they gotten over their awful start? Do you think they have turned the corner?
They have, and I think a lot of it has to do with, I think we talked about this before too, about the overarching Cubs conversation this year, is it's the health of Chris Bryant and his effectiveness. I think the fact that he, of course, had the walk-off hit this week, I look at his health as being a bellwether for this team, along with Rizzo. Rizzo has been better since the beginning part of April as well. The bullpen is still a bit of a concern for me, but in general, I think that the fact that the offense has picked up is a really good sign for them. The rotation has been better, and it's been more consistent. You've got John Lester the way that he has pitched. Even Darvish, to me, has improved a little bit too. So I think in general, we've just seen more of a normalizing of what you would expect the Cubs to do based on their track records in the past. As I mentioned, I think that the bullpen, the late-inning situation, probably is the one thing that you would be a bit concerned about as you approach the trade deadline. But Kyle Hendricks, you saw that remarkably efficient complete game last week against the Cardinals. So, to me, I'm very encouraged by the way that they played, and I think that, frankly, they're exceeding what my own expectations were for them, entering a year in which they were, I think, judged and maybe expected to be regressing a bit overall based on their maybe the aging of the roster, the sort of uncertainty surrounding Joe Maddon's future there. They've just simply played better, and the rotation, I think, and Chris Bryant and Rizzo have been the key reasons why.
What about the Dodgers? Are the Dodgers, when you look at the overall run differential, the Dodgers have gotten on a roll. Right now, the Cubs have a plus 54 run differential. I like to look at the run differential more than standings almost. Tampa Bay has got a plus 59. The Dodgers at plus 51, way better than anybody else in their division. Are the Dodgers going to win the West based on what you've seen through almost a quarter of the season?
Yes, and I will admit, Clay, to have been I was on the Rockies bandwagon after last year's appearance there in the postseason. I thought they were going to continue that growth and that their rotation would win the day, and it appears that I'm going to be wrong with my predictions once again, which is a very typical thing for me. I don't ever quite seem to be I'm probably better at predicting hockey, Clay, than I am at baseball, and I'm really not good at either one.
So who do you like, by the way, quickly in hockey at this point? You're an expert in both.
Parenthetically, the Lightning were my pick to win the cup, and they didn't even win a game in the playoffs. So there you go. But I think for the Dodgers, you know, and I realize Bellinger's had a bit of an injury scare here lately with his shoulder, but he has been playing like an MVP, obviously batting over 400. Jock Peterson, I think, has been much more consistent than he really has been in the past. I think that's been a great sign for them too. Turner coming up with the big three-homer game here recently. So I think just overall, the Dodgers have benefited, I believe, on some level from a bit of a more consistent lineup every day. There's been, I think, a little bit less of the in and out of the lineup day-to-day changing that they've had in the past. They've been much more consistent there. So I credit Dave Roberts there. And I think overall in the rotation, Hyunjin Ryu, very good start to the year. Really, in many ways, his best start to a season, an ERA of basically 2 through 7 games. Buehler's been better of late. Kershaw now is certainly not maybe his dominant self, but I think overall, certainly since his first start, he's been very encouraging there. So they're a team that's gotten better since the season began. Maybe still some worries a little bit with Kenley Jansen, but I look at them really in some similar ways to the Cubs. I think the Dodgers probably a little bit better than the Cubs, but I think overall the Dodgers with a great, I think, lineup very consistently with the way they played here with Bellinger playing like an MVP and being healthy again. So to me, Clay, I should have seen it coming with both teams. I did not predict either one would win the division, which of course means they both very likely will.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.